my wife. She's bleeding all over the place.
A family dog witnessed a brutal murder.
Whoever entered knew the victim, knew the dogs.
An animal expert finally got the dog to talk, just not in the usual way. There are two sides to Palm Beach County, Florida. It's home to some of the wealthiest people in the world. But a few miles away live people struggling just to pay their rent.
We have great neighborhoods and really bad neighborhoods. A lot of crime. For the size of the community we are, we have an extensive amount of violent crime, a lot of murders.
Kathy and Jeffrey Lamb didn't live in one of the Palm Beach mansions. Jeff was a tow truck driver. Kathy worked for the Walgreens drugstore chain.
I liked Jeff. He was a good kid. He was good to Kathy. And the main thing was she loved him. And therefore, I loved him.
On June 15, 2004, Jeff got home from work around 7 p.m. But when he walked inside, he found blood everywhere.
What's the problem there?
My wife hurt.
What's her name?
My wife hurt.
He was hysterical on the phone. He was crying so much that I think that 911 dispatcher kept referring to him as a woman.
Okay, ma'am, I need you to take some deep breaths. Take some deep breaths, okay? Breathe in and breathe out. Okay, now, are you having an asthma attack?
No, my wife is on the floor here. She's bleeding all over the place.
The blood spatter was completely up the one wall where the side of her head was, and then on the opposite wall behind her head, which was a good 5 or 6 feet. Blood spatter was all over a desk, and it flew underneath the desk to the wall through a chair. It was a lot of blood, and it was very gruesome.
When the ambulance crew arrived, they pronounced Kathy Lamb dead at the scene. She had been beaten to death.
This wasn't an injury that was caused by one blow or two blows. There were multiple blows to the head. This was something heavy that could create these injuries.
And between the first blow and what eventually killed her, she had to have been suffering. She was in pain. And she had to have been thinking, why?
The murder weapon wasn't found at the scene. Although it looked like it was a blunt object with a hexagon shape at the end. Two of the couple's three dogs were badly beaten, too. They were found unconscious nearby.
They were both euthanized because of the head injuries, the severe head injuries.
The dogs had blood on their paws and mouths, an indication they probably attacked the killer as he was striking Kathy.
The pack thing would have kicked in, and the two of them would have packed up on this one individual. So you would have had, in my opinion, you would have had probably quite a bit of damage.
And the killer would be bleeding profusely from those wounds.
It was decided that we would go ahead and clip their nails and swab their mouths because, again, if this was a home invasion type situation, there's a good chance that these dogs had scratched or bit the intruder.
The couple's third dog was found in a closed bedroom, apparently unharmed.
It was a mystery why anybody would choose to go into this residence with the three dogs, especially being large dogs.
Whenever I talked to Detective Kim Bradley, she told me we will get justice for Kathy. We are going to find the person that did this.
With no clear suspects, at least none that we're being told about, the Sheriff's Department is turning to the neighborhood for help, passing out these flyers with Kathy Lamb's picture on them and asking anyone who may have had any information about what happened here to give them a call.
Kathy Lamb's murder scene was stranger than any investigators had ever encountered. At first, They assumed the motive was robbery. Kathy's husband Jeff said the only thing missing was a pair of Kathy's gold diamond earrings.
The master bedroom, all the drawers were pulled out. Nothing has been disturbed, though. The clothes sit in there, still folded up, and there's lots of jewelry and items on top of the dresser.
The medical examiner estimated that Kathy was murdered between 4:30 and 5 in the afternoon. Since Jeff Lamb found his wife's body, he was naturally considered a suspect.
Jeff Lamb had a very good alibi. He's at his employment, and there's several people there that can vouch for his whereabouts at the time.
Soon, other suspects emerged. While police processed the crime scene, a woman named Joy Stidell arrived and introduced herself as Jeff Lamb's fiancée.
It's curious that the husband, the grieving husband, is now being consoled outside of the crime scene by his fiancée.
I think human nature would tell you when a guy's telling you he has a good relationship with his wife and a girlfriend or a fiance shows up at the crime scene, it's gonna start making you think something's going on here.
While Jeff admitted he had an affair with Joy Stidell, he claimed their relationship was over.
Jeffrey's story was that he had reconciled with his wife and that they were going to be permanently living together again. And it was contradictory that Joey Stidell would come into it and say, oh no, we're moving over to this house in Jupiter.
Joy Stidell was now a suspect too, but she had an alibi for the time of the murder. She worked as a waitress at a nearby restaurant and dozens of customers saw her. Next, Jeff's cell phone records identified yet another suspect. On the afternoon of the murder, Jeff Lamb spoke with another female friend on the telephone.
The first phone call that was made after we believe the murder took place was made to Lisa Adzerbell, who turned out to be Joey Stidell's neighbor.
Lisa Adzerbell was a married mother of two children. When questioned by police, Lisa admitted she too had a relationship with Jeff Lamb. In fact, Lisa's husband had caught them together in a compromising situation just a few weeks before Kathy Lamb's murder.
So I kicked my front door in and he was on my couch with no shirt on. He had shorts on or pants on or something, no shirt, socks, shoes, and grabbed it. Well, I got mad at him and chased him out the back sliding glass door.
Ray then said he called Jeff on the phone.
And then I left him a message on the cell phone that if he came around my house or family again, that, you know, I was mad, you know, said I would kill him, you know, I'll do anything to protect my family, and I don't want him around it.
When we first learned that Raymond had been so angry with Jeff, he was somebody that we were interested in, we certainly had to investigate.
Both Ray and Lisa Adzerbell had an alibi for the day of Kathy's murder and were eliminated as suspects. But police were still troubled by Lisa's telephone calls to Jeff on the afternoon of the murder. Lisa said they were purely social. Phone records proved that Lisa made these calls from home. But Jeff's cell phone records indicated Jeff wasn't at work as he claimed.
We get the phone records which show he is down by that house. The phone towers are hitting off of phone towers closer to the house than they are where he claims to be.
And investigators found another contradiction. Jeff said his dog Bandit was in a locked bedroom when he found his wife's body. But investigators found bloody paw prints in the bedroom, and the blood was Kathy's. This meant the killer put the dog in the bedroom after Kathy's murder. But why? An unknown assailant not only attacked Kathy Lamb, but also her two dogs, Nipper and Dakota, presumably with the same weapon.
Kathy's friends and even Mr. Lamb himself said that those dogs that were in that house would have torn apart a stranger.
But investigators couldn't understand why the dogs weren't all together.
Why were her two smaller dogs beat so severely, and yet the biggest dog of the group was never struck. And the dog was also locked in a bedroom.
The third dog was a hybrid, a wolf mix, that was owned by the husband.
Investigators thought the blood on the dog's mouths and paws had come from Kathy's attacker. But forensic testing disproved that.
The swabs and clippings that had been taken from the dogs came back negative for any human DNA.
The couple's third dog, Bandit, was initially believed to be unharmed, but the Humane Society discovered he suffered injuries too, but not from the killer.
We discovered that Bandit actually had several puncture marks, which had indicated that he had been in a fight and probably had been in a fight with the other two dogs.
So the dogs attacked one another, but not the killer, even while the killer was beating them.
And they stood there and they took their beatings, and then they went and they hid.
To animal behavioralists, the reason was clear.
And then a stranger wouldn't have been able to beat those dogs brutally the way they were beaten without them fighting back. Somebody obviously knew the dogs, so it had to be somebody that, you know, they weren't going to fight back.
So it seemed pretty clear from the evidence that only one person could have done this crime.
But prosecutors had a problem. The surviving dog, Bandit, obviously couldn't tell police what happened. So investigators had to dig deeper and started by looking into Jeff Lamb's finances. A few years earlier, Jeff's former employer accused him of stealing almost $30,000. He returned the money and agreed to pay an additional $20,000 fine.
He wasn't a dumb man, but you didn't think he was like real bright and was going to set the world on fire.
His current job as a tow truck driver didn't pay particularly well, and these payments were a hardship.
You know, $20,000 isn't a lot of money to most people, but to some people, it's like $1 million.
Police also discovered that Jeff was the beneficiary of Kathy's $29,000 life insurance policy.
He was making restitution for prior criminal activity. I think he was tired of making those payments. It was a very small life insurance policy, but I think to him, it was the answer to what he needed, and it didn't matter how he got it.
In a search for forensic evidence, investigators had the presence of mind to confiscate the clothing Jeff was wearing the day of the murder.
The clothes that we took from him at the scene was a T-shirt with the Tasmanian devil on the front, making an L shape like this, and underneath the caption, "Loser." He was wearing a pair of dark blue jeans and black boots.
A forensic analysis found no blood on the shirt and boots. But blood spatter expert Stuart James examined the jeans, section by section, under a stereo microscope.
Well, the dark color of the jeans certainly made it more difficult to see blood.
But at 60 times magnification, James could see things invisible to the naked eye. Deep within the fabric, on the jeans' left leg, near the inside of the thigh, James saw tiny specks of what appeared to be blood.
The suspected blood stains were actually down within the weave and between the weave of the fabric, which indicated to me that these stains were not the result of transfer, which would have just been on the top of the weave, but rather down driven into the weave, much more consistent with impact spatter.
The blood spatter was the same size and shape as one would expect to find after inflicting a beating with a blunt object. DNA testing of this blood revealed it was Kathy Lamb's blood.
We have impact spatters at the scene on the wall, and we also have impact spatters on the left interior thigh area of the dark jeans of Jeffrey Lamb.
This was definitive proof Jeffrey Lamb struck the fatal blows.
The splatters were so deeply embedded in the fabric that it couldn't have just been an incidental contact, that it had to be with force. And, you know, thank God he didn't change his pants.
And blood spatter expert Stuart James found one more thing.
He just happened to reach into one of the pockets, just checking to see if there was anything in there, and he found an earring, a little diamond earring that belonged to Kathy. And Jeff Lamb had told the police that those earrings were missing.
Investigators now had everything they needed, except the murder weapon. 2 months after Kathy Lamb's murder, a workman found a tire iron on the roof of his building.
He'd been on the roof because it had been leaking over at the tow company, and he'd found a tire tool that was used on one of their big, big tow trucks.
It was the office building of the tow yard where Jeff Lamb worked. The tire iron had hexagonal heads for loosening and tightening nuts. It was tested for DNA.
We tried everything to test the tire iron, but the problem is it's South Florida and it rains all the time. The tire iron was on the roof for 2.5 months. The sun would have evaporated any DNA as well as the water washing it off.
But since it was so distinctive, as were the wounds on Kathy's body, the tire iron was still a valuable piece of evidence. The hexagonal head was placed over photographs of Kathy's wounds.
And you look at the injuries on Kathy's face, and you're like, there's no way in the world anything other than this did it. And it was so unusual. You've never seen anything like it in your life.
Jeffrey Lamb was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Prosecutors believe Jeff wanted out of his marriage. He often told friends that Kathy was a poor housekeeper, but apparently Jeff was no better.
You know, he called her dirty, and yet his truck was filthy. I mean, he had more garbage in his truck than you would throw out in the street. I don't know if you call him a hypocrite or something, but you know, he didn't live a better lifestyle than his wife.
The couple separated for a few years, but even after they reconciled, Jeff continued to have affairs. Kathy tolerated his infidelity, but she didn't like it.
I felt very sorry for Kathy. I felt very bad because I knew that she loved him very much, and I thought that she would be very hurt over that.
Jeff was paying off a $20,000 fine for embezzlement, and a divorce would have left him with even less money to make those payments.
Jeff had a friend. He had told him that I'm not going to lose my stuff and I'm not going to give up her life insurance policy. I'll kill her before she divorces me.
Prosecutors believe Jeff planned to use Kathy's life insurance proceeds to start a new life with his fiancée. On the afternoon of the murder, Jeff was at work. His fiancée's car was at the tow yard for repairs. According to co-workers, Jeff said he was taking the car to get gasoline and left sometime between 4:30 and 5 o'clock. The evidence suggests he went home, waited for Kathy to return from work, and when she did, beat her to death with the tire iron. In the process, he got blood spatter on his jeans. The dogs didn't attack him, but in their agitation, they attacked each other. To separate them, he hit Kathy's dogs and took his dog, Bandit, into the bedroom and closed the door. He took Kathy's diamond earrings to make it look like a robbery. One of those earrings was later found in his pocket. Jeff changed his shirt and shoes, but not his jeans. He probably didn't see the blood on them. Jeff's friend Lisa called him on his cell phone just after 5 p.m. The call bounced off a cell tower near Jeff's home, proving he wasn't at work as he claimed. There's no evidence Lisa knew anything about the murder. When he returned to the tow yard, he threw the murder weapon up onto the roof, thinking no one would ever find it. His co-worker did, however, 2 months later, while repairing a leaking roof.
The blood spatter was supported by the cell phone records, and it was further supported by the actions of the dogs.
It was planned. He took my daughter from us, her family, and her friends for $29,000.
In September of 2006, Jeffrey Lamb was convicted of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole.
We were confident going to trial because the case wasn't just based on science. It was based on common sense.
I don't believe he gets up one morning of one day and says, "How could I have done that to that human being?" Beside the fact that she was my wife, besides the fact that I've known her since she was a teenager.
His first mistake was not to change his clothes after he'd killed his wife. The second mistake would be throwing a tool up on a roof where it doesn't belong and somebody may discover it.
His clothing was the key to the case. If the detectives had not asked him to remove his clothing, we could never have convicted him of the crime. He definitely would be walking free today.